Reading from Swami Ramdas, The Divine Life, Invincible Spiritual Power. Human life is a rare gift of God. It can be elevated to the highest eminence by making it dwell in a supreme and all-powerful consciousness in order to produce results beneficial to itself and to the world at large. Every human life is capable of understanding and realizing the secret origin from which it had evolved and manifested. Every human life is capable of understanding and realizing the great secret origin from which it has evolved and manifested. The moment life is illumined with the knowledge of its omnipotence and immortality, it stands revealed in all its glory, armed with a subtle and invincible strength and power that counteracts evil and establishes righteousness in the world. Dear reader, such a spiritual power is your immortal possession. You have only to become aware of it and utilize it. Pursue the supreme blessedness of peace and freedom for yourself, and also create in the world an atmosphere of goodwill and harmony. The world, as it is seen today, influenced by the lower nature, is heading towards a course of hate and destruction. At this critical juncture, it behooves every one of you to gather up the entire spiritual possibilities of your being and work out, in concentrated thought and deed, a state of things in which the grim and devastating clashes that are imminent are made impossible. The power of the spirit is invincible. It can stem the tide of every other power that seeks to generate chaos and confusion in the world. You are a veritable storehouse of divine energy. Open the store and let the eternal splendor that burns within you radiate its light out and dispel the deepening gloom in this world. Man is not a mere man. Man is the very image of God, with all the potentialities of that supreme being. Man is an immortal power of light, love, and peace. Declare yourself as this truth. Make the inherent divinity of your nature the bedrock of all your thoughts and activities in the world. The passions incited by ambitions for material glory and fame, spelling disaster to mankind, can be quelled by the superior power of the Spirit. Wherever you be, in whatever situation you are placed, you can develop the infinite power to resist and conquer the fury of a calamitous influence that at present aims at involving the world in a carnage of wanton bloodshed, woe, and misery. Do not believe that the material world is the only reality. Many might tell you that you are only a weak and erring mortal, that you are a helpless tool in the hands of degrading impulses of your lower nature. No. You are the immortal reality itself, imbued with the inexhaustible strength, material as well as spiritual. The greater of the two is the spiritual that dominates over and controls the material. From the silent spirit of your being, let waves of unity, love, and goodness ever rise in the soothing aroma of the incense. Certainly, it is within your power to convert not only your life, but the life of mankind into a heaven upon earth. Thoughts pregnant with universal beneficence, words that cheer and awaken, and actions that heal and alleviate are yours. A great black cloud is at present hanging over the world, a menacing cloud that may break into an unimaginably horrible disaster. Scatter this cloud by the exercise of the omnipotent energy inherent in you. Do not merely sit and watch, but let the great spirit within you be active. Let it assert its serenity and shed on all humanity its rays of harmony and peace. May the Lord within you unite in the common feeling of brotherhood all the people of this earth and destroy the tendencies that kindle the fire of disorder and devastation amongst them. Powerful words from a powerful master. How oftentimes do we cling to our littleness as if it is our all, our weaknesses as if it is our truth. The darkness in this world as if it is an ultimate reality. All of it are just like a fog that has encased the world, but the sun shining begins to remove that fog. And then once the sun shines, we see that the fog had no reality, not in truth. Through generous gift of wonderful devotees, Carl and I were given a trip to go to Hawaii this past week. And while all of you were in 7 or 9 inches of snow, we were having to suffer through 70 and 80 degree weather. You can feel sorry for us if you like. It's a wonderful time. And I thought, well, God, you're taking us to Hawaii. This is truly, I think, the first sort of vacation we've taken in 10 years. And I thought, but, you know, none of it is truly satisfying unless we find some spiritual aspect to all of this. So if there's something spiritual in the islands to find, let us find it. And I'd like to read to you from a book entitled Ancient Hawaii. And it has here a creation story. In the beginning, there was only darkness, an infinite and timeless night. But within that void brooded an intelligence. The Earth Mother, Papa, was created in the darkness. Light was created, the procreative light of the Sky Father, Wakea. In their embrace, male light penetrated female darkness. And from this union of opposites was created a universe of opposites. So it was that the universe was given form and life, for only in the union of light and darkness can there be life and growth of living things, all fathered by sunlight and mothered in darkness of the soil, the egg or the womb. The great spirits were born. Tane, the creator, was firstborn, and the eldest, he reigned over the others. He was the spirit of creation, of sunlight, fresh water, and forests, and the male ancestor of all living things, including the people. There was Tangaroa of the ocean, and Tu, in the many guises and under names, was patron of the works of men, and Rongo, patron of agriculture and healing. There were the male ancestors of all things in nature, the sources of all power or mana, the sources of all power or mana. When these spirits came to Hawaii, there was a great turbulence of thunderstorms and whirlwinds and blazes of lightning. Their eyes flashed upon the land, and the land shook as they landed upon it. And so we recognize within this creation story so many similarities to creation stories we know through the Bible and other sources. And the predominant theme within all the creation stories is that everything came from what is called a void or a darkness. And there is this lack of ability of words to be able to really clearly identify and say what God is before it became creation. All creation has come from that infinite void. And I've told you before, and I think it's a wonderful vision that God gave to me. But it's as if you had a huge lake of water in which it's completely still and quiet. And then you go to the edge of the lake, and there is a cliff, and over the cliff is an immense waterfall. And over this waterfall, the water thunders and roars and falls a great height. And you realize that all the power, all the noise, everything that's in that waterfall and then setting itself loose into a river down below, it flows and flows all the way to the sea. All of that power, all of that noise, all of that energy is contained within the lake. And yet when you look at the lake, it's perfectly still and smooth and mirror-like. And so it is with our divine consciousness. Everything is held in potentiality in that vast body of water before it becomes the waterfall. But then we spill out into this creation and we cascade into it. And then we come into duality, the light and the darkness. The sunlight and the darkness of the earth, it's all representative of these dualities. And it's both are necessary in order for creation to come about. And so we have light and dark. We have high and low. We have the in and we have the out. And all of these things are necessary for the creative play. But these, as Papa said, these destructive forces that we see today, these forces that run toward the material and toward envy and toward anger and hatred and lack of fulfillment, there's no satisfaction of the heart's desires. It's constantly seeking. And it goes out and out and out. And there's no end to it until we finally come to the conclusion that this world, as marvelous as it is, as promising as it appears to be, cannot be our final resting place. It cannot be the place where we really find the fulfillment of the heart's desire. That can only come from the divine union. And so we find this story told all over this world. And it is the story of mankind that we came out of this wonderful unity. But out of that unity came the diversity. And so many times, out of that diversity came the inharmony. The inharmony is not a necessity. It is something that is manufactured in man's mind because he has entered into a field of separation. But the great masters have shown us that we can reside in the spirit of unity even while we live in a world of diversity. I'd like to read to you something from my journal when we were in Hawaii. And we had a wonderful experience while we were there. We were taken without any pre-knowledge on our part to an ancient temple. And I wondered before going to Hawaii whether we would find anything within the ancient culture that had spiritual essence to it. And indeed, we did find that. And I wrote, "Drawn to an ancient Hawaiian temple grounds, the rock foundation that was transported up the mountain by hand is what has made us come without knowing of its existence. The overgrown ruins is modest in physical attributes, long on spiritual history, and rich in spiritual blessings to the attuned soul. As we approached the ruins, Carla said she felt a push from behind, making it easy to walk up the hill. I too felt a joy in coming near. Finding a corner of the squared area of rock wall and rock base, there was a lower area of the stone wall and made stepping up easy, we found ourselves on the temple grounds. Sure footing took us over the uneven rocky foundation overgrown with grass and ferns. I was guided to a small patch that was rock-covered only by some lichen, not grass. We sat for some time, sitting cross-legged with my hands on the lava rocks that formed the base I was deeply indrawn. I was aware that some great souls had been priests or kahunas here. Their living presence came into my consciousness. Wonders of wonders, their blessings came, causing a deep attunement. One of these great beings bid me wait, and a great blessing would come. Through my hands on the rocks, I felt the sacredness of the earth in a unique and utterly profound way. I continued in the awareness of these spiritual beings and the sacred grounds, and then a branch of the green fern waved over my head, touching my head in a back and forth movement. I felt a blessing from these masters, much in the way some yogis will bless with a fan made of natural reeds. Eventually, Carla and I circumnavigated the temple grounds clockwise. We both felt spiritually cleansed, blessed, and renewed. I read that to show that spiritual blessings and the spirit of divine consciousness is everywhere. I remember writing Greg when I got there and saying that feeling spiritual consciousness and the sacredness of the ground there just confirmed one more time the universality of God's Spirit. It's interesting that in reading a book about David, the ancient prophet of Israel, and in his early life, he interpreted the words, the God of Israel, as only being applicable to a certain area of land that God had granted the Israelites. And at one point in his life, he was forced to go out of the precincts of what was then defined as Israel. And in his mind, he thought that in leaving the physical part of that world, he would also be leaving the God of Israel, that he would no longer be able to commune with God as he had been. And there was the belief that there were many gods, and apparently that different gods had sway over certain areas. And if you left that area, you left that particular God. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? And so when he left that area, he realized that he was still able to commune with his ever-living God. And in this way, his consciousness expanded. He no longer relegated the God of Israel to just that physical locality. Now, we think today that that's a strange notion. But all of us have contained God in certain ways. We have defined him in certain ways that limits his nature. And this is something that we all have to struggle with, because the mind, by its very essence, wants to contain, wants to define things, wants to put a little box around God, wrap a bow around it, put a label on it, and put it up on the shelf and say, there, now I understand that. Because that gives us comfort. That gives us an inner assurance. But it's not the truth. In order to realize God, we have to go beyond what we have traditionally thought of as what God is. Know that whatever you think God is a conjuring of the mind, and therefore is untrue. It's your best estimate. But it's not the truth, and it cannot be the truth, until we have rooted ourselves in the divine experience. This is one of the great gifts that India has given to the world knowledge. One, that God can be realized in each and every person. And the second is given the tools in order to realize that divine oneness. Now, in this experience that I had with these priests or these kahunas, the purity of their consciousness was apparent and absolute. And it felt like any of the great masters that I have known. Now, I know that there are others that did not live up to that. But isn't that true everywhere that we go? We cannot judge the whole by what a few do. We must know that deeply embedded, every person is that divine seed. And sometimes this is difficult to see. The humanness inside of us gets triggered by the humanness inside somebody else. So you meet somebody, and perhaps they're an unlovely version of a human being. And you think, my goodness, and you feel assaulted by them. And so what do? It triggers the humanity within your own self. You feel outraged by them. You feel hurt by them. You somehow are affected by them. That takes you to the same level that they are. Now, it doesn't mean that you're a mean person or an unlovely person. But you react in kind, you see. And instead of doing this, if we can continue to see the divine seed that is hidden deep within the soil of that being, and that by us recognizing the divinity within that person, it can draw that person out. Papa told many wonderful stories of when he is traveling all over India, and there was one time when they were kicked off the train because as sadhus they would just hitch rides on the train without paying anything because they carried no money with them. And some of the train station agents allowed for that and others didn't. So every once in a while they'd be told to all get off. And one station master had them come out and he shined a big lantern right in their faces and went up and down and he told them to sit right there. And there's a small group of them. And a little while later, the station agent came out and he says, no, what are you sitting there? Sit over here. So they all had to get up and walk over and sit down there. A few minutes later, he says, what are you, a bunch of dunderheads? I didn't tell you to sit there. Sit over here. And he kept moving them back and forth and all around the area. And Papa started laughing and one of the other sadhus started getting irritated at this and say, what is wrong with this fellow? And Papa said, never mind, Ram. He said, Ram has taken pity on us. We've been sitting on the train for so long, and he's just giving us a little exercise by moving us from this place to that place, getting circulation going. And that's how Papa saw it. He saw everything as God operating through different agents. Another station agent took them off, and when he lined them all up, and then he started beating them, one of the sadhus over the head. And the sadhu had a big smile on his face, and Papa tried to nudge him out of the way because he wanted to get what this other sadhu was getting. Apparently he was in bliss as he was receiving these blows, and the other fellow wouldn't give way. And so Papa wanted him and requested also that he get the beating. And it just completely took all the anger out of the station agent. And he stopped doing all the behavior. But you see, whatever the station agent would have done, Papa would have taken it as God coming to him. And you see what happened for Papa. He was always in a state of bliss because there could be no one who would do things in opposition to himself. Now, this doesn't make us a doormat, and it certainly didn't make Papa a doormat. He could stand up for truth. And he could clearly articulate it when the time came. But by and large, he surrendered himself and he accepted what God gave to him as perfect for him. Now let us contrast that to reacting and responding in a different way. We take it personally. We get offended. We feel angry. We feel jealous. We feel put down or put off by another person, by their actions. And it takes us into a roller coaster ride because some people treat us well and some people treat us poorly. Sometimes people fulfill what we want of them and other people disappoint us. When we are attached and react humanly, we are on a constant roller coaster ride of up and down, of happy and then sad, of feeling fulfilled and then feeling deflated. And it will always be this way, you see, because no matter how perfectly we try to arrange our life, it is never perfect in the way that we want it. And so the moment we accept it, the moment we surrender to the divine life, as the author of everything that is, and we give ourselves over that to that divine life, we feel that peace, we feel that bliss. Now, Papa also said in this writing today that we are not to be merely stand by and watch the world events go by. We are to be active participants in it. But it is as God guides us. It is through that universal vision. When you see things that are not in harmony with man's, with nature's law, or with God's law, then you assert yourself. Now, we can do that in a number of ways. Sometimes we have to physically move into a situation and change it. The wonderful soul that I met, Peace Pilgrim, she saw this world in a state of, you might say, unpeace, not peace. And she wanted to do something about it. And so she donned a sweatshirt that said walking 25,000 miles for peace. She took no money with her. She took nothing. She is a modern sadhu that walked the roads of America. And she vowed that she would walk until she is given rest, that she would fast until given something to eat. And she went many, many years all over America, bringing the idea that peace begins with you. Peace begins with you. And she told the story, I think it's a wonderful story, about a young mother who said that she would get very, very angry with her children. She would start to yell at them, and sometimes she would start to beat them, she admitted. And what could she do? They were small children. She couldn't leave the house. She didn't have a babysitter. There was no break for her. And so Peace Pilgrim, with her intuition, came up with a brilliant idea. And she said, I'll tell you what to do. And so she told her, and when the woman got home, she put it into practice. And it was this, the children would start fighting with each other, and there would be such a fuss going up, and she would feel her blood begin to boil. And right there in the middle of the room, she'd start to run in place. Well, the children just stopped their arguing immediately and stared at amazement at the mother with their jaws dropped. What was she doing? Is she insane? And as she continued to stand there and run in place, pretty soon they started to laugh. And as they started to laugh, then she started to laugh. And the whole thing was changed right there. It broke the spell. And it's a wonderful story. It's a way that we can creatively find to change our environment, to change our response to this environment. It is time, and it is past time, that we really get to work on ourselves. And it's not just for us, you see. Self-realization is something that is done for this entire world. Sometimes we think only grand beings like the Buddha or Jesus can take on the sins of this world. But Jesus said a great truth, a wonderful truth. He said, "And I, if I be lifted up, will lift up this entire world." And this states a spiritual truth, that when you rise up in spiritual consciousness, you help to lift up this world. On the other hand, when people go along with things that are not right, and they do things that they know is against their own better judgment. They degrade the world. They draw the world down. If enough people stand up for light, if they stand up for what is right, it doesn't need to be the majority, you see. But a very determined few will begin to change this world, and suddenly it'll be in vogue to live up to the light, to do in service for others. Can you imagine such a world in which everybody is serving one another, doing for one another? This world would veritably become a heaven on earth. There's nothing wrong with having a business and having a business make money, because through that they're able to hire people and to raise the standard of living of everybody. But there are lines that businesses should not cross. They should. There was a wonderful entrepreneur named J.C. Penney. And when he started his store, he called it the Golden Rule Store. And it was that each one of the clerks should treat each one of the patrons of the store just as they themselves would want to be treated if they were shopping in the store. Can you imagine what kind of an environment that would make? If management treated those who were down the organizational charts just the same way they would want to be treated if they had that lower position, or that those who were in the lower organizational positions would treat respectfully their bosses just the same way as if they were the boss. You see, you put yourself in the other person's shoes, and then you give to them exactly as inside you feel to give toward that one. Now, that doesn't mean you give in to everything that that one asks of you or wants from you, because not everything somebody wants is the right thing. But you tune in to yourself and you give according to how God inside of you says to give. And when you give that way, it puts you in attunement with God. And the more you do that, the more attuned your mind becomes. You see, your mind is like a wonderful radio receiver. Now, just as a radio receiver can be tuned to blankness and you just get static, so your mind can be. You tune into another station and you get disharmony. And you tune into another station and you get perfection. That's the station that we want. And its call letters are R-A-M or G-O-D. And that's what we should be tuning ourselves into. You see how far we get. Even when we're aspirants, even when we're genuinely on the path, how much we forget and how much we get off track. Now, not all the world needs to belong to a single religion except in this way. There is only one religion because there is only one God. Religion, you know, all it means is getting together. In India, they call it satsang, an association with truth. And that's all it means, is it's kindred spirits and souls who come together in order to worship God. Now, when we come together as we are today, there is a synergy that is built. And it begins to build an energy when people's minds are attuned in the proper way. And a vibration goes out from that. And it helps to change all those who are attending. And it goes out and it helps to change this world too. And so there is a power when Jesus said, "Where two or more are gathered, there I am." He was talking about that kind of synergy. That kind of, that the sum is more than the total of its parts. Something builds in there that is more than just the two. And so when we are all attuned, when we are all deeply indrawn, and we feel the divine consciousness within and without. We become like a nuclear reactor that begins to build more and more and more energy. Only unlike a nuclear reactor that can explode in a negative way, this is a nuclear reactor that can emit tremendous light. And that light goes all over this world. And this world sorely needs it. It sorely needs it. It needs a transformation. It needs an infusion of divine energy. And we look for some kind of savior to come to knock some heads together and get people straightened out and tell people what's what. But you know what? That's not how God works. Even when he sends his savior, look at what the results are. Oftentimes they are sent away and they are crucified. And so we think, oh, well, we just need somebody bigger. But that's not how it works. We all have free will. God has eternally given us free will. We must awaken the Godhead within first. And then it will spread all over this world. Do not ever shift into neutral in your spiritual path. There is no neutral. The mind is constantly creating. And if you're not always with your shoulder to the wheel, you will go to default mode. And default mode is the human ego mode. And it will take you down. So you must always be mindful of where your mind is being placed. Are you thinking of God? Are you loving God? Are you serving him in all ways? Are there areas where you consistently get caught up in the negativity or the passions of the ego? If there are, then begin to rehearse in your mind, doing it in a different way, doing it in a God-tuned way. Begin to place yourself into difficult situations and think, all right, now, how would I really want to act in this situation? And then rehearse it in your mind until you feel it. Thinking it is good, but feeling it is more powerful. And do it until you feel it, and you feel the inner freedom. You feel the inner attunement, no matter what the outer circumstances are. And in this way, you will begin to program your mind so that you will rise above all conditions. And even at that moment of leaving the body, and the moment that many people fear, and to have absolutely no fear around it, and to feel God's blessings on you, and to feel that light drawing you unto itself, and that you leave everything behind in one sense, in a human sense. But in a spiritual sense, you embrace everything. You see, once you leave this body, and you no longer have to contend with its limitations, you can easily identify with any time or any place in spirit. Now, in truth, you can do that even while you're in a body. It's more challenging for most people because the things of the body call to us so strongly. But the truth is, you can embrace all creation or any aspect of creation and immediately be with a beloved person, to be in a beloved space, just as quick as a thought. Just as quick as a thought. Now, some people say, oh, that's just imagination. But the difference is that the spiritual freedom that comes to you, when you truly identify with that, and you can carry on conversations with people living or who we call dead, who are not really dead, they've just left the body. And we can feel them. We can hear them. We can be with them in every way that is important. And so this is the great promise, you see. Don't define yourself strictly as a human being. You were born to be a God. This is not to say any, you know, we project a human ego. Oh, yes, that person would be arrogant if they were a God. It's not so. There's something about the divine nature that the more you experience it, the more humility it engenders in you. And it is not a false humility. It is not something that you try on like a pair of clothes and try to be humble. You get it. You get it that there is only one divine consciousness, one power. And that power and that consciousness is flowing through you. But you are but a witness to what the divine consciousness is doing through you and all around you. And now you glory in that bliss and in that peace and in that joy. You realize that all this idea of separation, all the grief, all the worry, all the dead ends that passions took you to, that they are all meaningless and never really meant anything at all. So let us awaken, awaken. Let us really put our shoulder to the wheel. We've entered into a new year, and it's nice to mark the new year with new beginnings. And as we come from the darkest day of the year and we're gradually getting lighter and lighter, let us take that as symbolically our own spiritual understanding. What does Sri Yukteswar say is the sign of God realization? Ever new joy. Ever new joy. Let us keep that as a landmark, as a way to guide ourselves. Are we feeling an increasing amount of joy? Are we feeling an increasing amount of peace? Are we feeling an increasing amount of universal love? If we are not, then we are not making the progress that we should. We must hold ourselves accountable. It is not enough to just say we are on a spiritual path or that we are a Kriyabhan. We must live the life, you see. And we must get the results. And we must strive until we do. And when you do, then you will experience the freedom, the absolute unity with divine consciousness. So that no matter what happens, if somebody is praising you or knocking you on the head, it is all God. It is all God. Now let us pray. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. O Father, We are one, forever one. peace, bliss, ever new joy. Pranams. I bow to the divine within you. May each of you, as a glorious seed, sprout, grow into a magnificent tree of God, giving shelter, fruit, and all to the world.